You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded on the 11th of November, 2024. It's Veterans Day in the U.S. So while everyone is talking about the American election, I want to talk about two much smaller countries who've had elections and a referendum or two. This year, and they're very strategic because the two countries are Georgia and Moldova. Now, I want to start off by saying that the regime is panicking there. The reason that these two countries are even more strategic than normal, despite their size, is that the regime wants to use them, wants to use their men to open up a second front, at least, against Russia, since Ukraine now is, unfortunately, history. So these two countries have shown deep divisions. They both had substantial elections this year and a referendum in October and November. And they really have sent the same message. They're not going to serve as sacrificial lambs here. And Georgia, in particular, was to lead this second front, which is just another form of national suicide. Georgia already fought Russia in August of 2008 and lost very badly and very quickly. The regime learned from that. The IDF was heavily involved in Georgia at the time. The defense minister was Jewish and an Israeli citizen back in late summer 08. The regime learned from that defeat when it came to arming the much larger Ukrainian state. Now, a lot of this comes from my own research over the decades, but more recently, and that's what got me on this topic, the articles from Andrew Korobiko, Ahmed Adel, Stephen Karganovich, have helped me organize some of my own thoughts on the matter. Now, I have spoken of both Georgia and Moldova quite a few times over the years, but not recently. But it shows you the bloodlust of the regime. They're not just going to depopulate Ukraine. They're trying to get it done using Georgia and very possibly Moldova. And that these people would vote to allow themselves to be cannon fodder for foreign interests, which are diametrically opposed to their own, that requires some comment. The plan, at least as of now, has largely failed. See, back in 2008 in Georgia, it was the, and I say this not as a mocking thing, but the mentally ill Saakashvili, who is, I think, as of right now, currently in prison for felony assault against another member of parliament, who, of course, educated in the West, has very few ties to Georgia itself, but he was the leader of Georgia at the time. But it's different today. The president is a complete foreigner. She was born in France, educated in France and the U.S., Salome Zurabishvili. But that's just the president. Georgia has a divided system where, of course, the legislature is very powerful. It's more on the French model, actually, on the older French model. And the legislature, the nationalists have won handily, and their actions are absolutely aberrant. And these recent elections there have just been a wake-up call. The Nationalist Party, which is called the Georgian Dream, Democratic Georgia, won the legislative elections on October 26th with, all told, 54% of the vote in a multi-party system, not just two. Its leader is Irakli Kobakijde, who was educated in Germany, but mostly at home, and he is prime minister. Now, the result was fully certified by their own electoral commission, but Sulome Zurabishvili is, I mean, the Color Revolution people are all foreigners. They don't have a lot of ties to their home country. They're usually oligarchs, but this woman, a much older woman, is a foreigner in almost every sense, except really her name. Born in France, educated there. She was part of Columbia University in the early 70s and worked under the infamous Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the director of the Trilateral Commission, and he personally helped train her on diplomacy. That's where her worldview comes from. Saakashvili was educated at Columbia University Law School and George Washington University in D.C. Now, the issue in Georgia is that Kobakijde's predecessor, by the way, also has a first name of Irakli, Garabashvili. Kobakijde took over in February of this year. Prior to that, anticipating these elections, what the regime will do, he proposed and then passed, because Parliament can pass a law without and enact it without presidential approval, at least sometimes. The law mandates transparency in financing, and this sent the regime orbital. And it was aimed at the corporate-sponsored NGOs. And believe it or not, the number of actual sanctioned NGOs in Georgia is about 20,000, you know, in a fairly small country. So the foreign-sponsored cabal kind of lost it with this transparency law. The president, a foreigner, former French foreign ministry functionary, and a lot of these people struggle with their own languages. Zelensky's Ukrainian is so-so, and her Georgian is too. And of course, this law is at least in part aimed at her. She refused to sign the duly passed foreign agent transparency law, so it could go into effect, but it came to nothing. The president of the Georgian parliament could also sign this. So it's an interesting political system. But the point, of course, is not just to bring Georgia into the European Union, where even if by the EU's own charter, it has no role in the EU. Same thing for Moldova. It doesn't have, you know, there's this list of things you have to have in your economy to be a part of the EU. They have zero. So it's just to keep them away from Russia. And then, of course, ultimately, NATO. And this law and their defeat, there was an attempt to put Georgia into a military confrontation with Russia. And at least as far as October 28th, there were mass protests scheduled in Tbilisi. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But the regime, again, extremely angry. You know, the Russians have had this law for a long time. She did everything in her power. The main asset is the president herself, and she has tried to undermine the electoral process and this law, which just proved the necessity of the legislation. Now, the regime, of course, immediately said, without any knowledge whatsoever, it's all just fill in the blank at this point with these people. Zurabishvili said that there was no proof of Russian interference. This is a lot of projection because her very existence is American and French interference. It's all just projection. They accuse everyone else of doing what they do every single day. And so she has become less and less popular, and the legislature more so. Now, a week before that Georgia vote and the legislative elections, there was a referendum in Moldova. There's also a presidential election, different story. And it came down to trying to get basic information on what the citizens of that smallish and relatively poor country thought about the EU. Again, neither Georgia nor Moldova produce anything that the EU wants. This is just to try to make up for the losses from sanctions by asset stripping in these countries. You know, Ukraine is done for, so they want to go elsewhere. And that's all this is. Cheap labor, whatever their industrial assets, just trying to make up for their own self-destruction. So in Moldova, the pro-Western client regime, as a few people have called it, the EU wants to bring it into NATO. It was a rigged voting process. And in the process of rigging it, you know, the NGOs, they were claiming that the Russians were actually rigging it. So it was a almost 50-50 split here. One of the biggest problems, we'll talk about this with the presidential election in a little bit. There's two Moldovan diasporas, the one in EU countries, which is fairly large, and the other one, Moldovans living in Russia, which is much smaller, about 500,000 people. Moldovans living in Russia were barred from taking part in the referendum, while those living in the EU were permitted to do so. Still, though, with all of these, you know, the ruling party had full control of the media and everything else. It was almost precisely 50-50, which sent the regime into a panic. I doubt that 50% of the country supported this, although I've been told that there's a lot of brainwashed people there. But of course, Moldova also had a presidential election. And again, deeply divided. The president there is Maia Sandu. Again, a foreigner running the country. Fraud was reported everywhere, including by the regime's institutions itself. And that was on November 3rd. Sandu is an advocate for NATO, for war, the World Economic Forum, a young leadership program. She is a product of that. She barely squeaked in what most people there say is a completely rigged election. Of course, she was educated at Harvard, worked for the World Bank, few roots in her own country. But I found it interesting that despite her squeaking in and immediately was, you know, proclaimed the choice of the Moldovan people by the West, her level of trust, and this is as of 2019, it's about 24%. The nationalist leader, who I've dealt with before personally on this show as a you know, essentially a national socialist leader, Igor Dodon, is about 25%, slightly more trustworthy. But that same year, there was another poll, and when I publish this, it's going to have all the links on it, that Sandu actually is the sixth most trusted politician rather than the second. But with these kind of numbers, it's a little odd. The Moldovan nationalist movement has not really taken the bait here. Ultimately, the numbers are also very deeply divided. There was calls for color revolutions in one place, but not the other, and we all know why. It's about their geopolitical orientation. NGOs are in full control of the press, of social media, forums for debate, and are the conduits for both money and intelligence assets. So if, you know, in Moldova, the outcome barely serves the system goals, the election is automatically considered fair. In Georgia, if it hinders them, it's fraudulent. But in all cases, the regime says that Russia is involved, as they are involved. In the process of trying to manipulate these elections, they say that the Russians are trying to manipulate these elections. I mean, they're not being subtle about this. Now, in Moldova, there were pretty egregious irregularities. Similar allegations of misconduct in Georgia don't seem to have the evidence that the Moldovan one. But it doesn't make any difference. Truth is not the issue. Now, as far as Moldova is concerned, the Moldovans living there in Russia were disenfranchised. I think there was only two polling stations on Russian territory. They only made available as paper ballots, but they only printed up 10,000 of them. So there was a handful that were actually able to vote. The diaspora in the EU, regardless of how long they've been there and whether or not they send money back, they also were enfranchised, and maybe more so. Now, the regime was thinking that if Moldovans are living in the European Union, working there, places like Germany, etc., they may have a self-interested reason to vote for Maia Sandu. Now, I have a problem with this since they've been living and working abroad before this. But the referendum was meant to enshrine the goal of the EU and Moldova becoming part of it within the Moldovan constitution. But, you know, in the first round of the presidential elections on October 20th, the diaspora is essentially what, as far as the president is concerned, the diaspora is what elected her. And still, a razor-thin margin on both counts. Those who were actually living in the country, slightly rejected by a small percent, at least according to the official numbers, slightly rejected her and the European Union. I mean, Maia Sandu is a complete puppet in every way. But despite all of this, you don't see the protests and the violence that the color revolutions usually bring about. I mean, for very obvious reasons. That means that these color revolutions are phony. They could always find people who have a problem with the ruling class for a bunch of reasons and bring them all under one big tent. The evidence for it in Georgia, though, is minimal. But when the regime itself admits to Moldovan irregularities, then you know it's got to be far worse than they're saying. The default monopoly on so-called civil society, media, which consider disinformation, automatically any election is going to be a problem because there was only one side promoted. Georgia, of course, went against the regime, immediately denounced as fraudulent. You know, elections in places like Belarus and Russia, before anyone even looks at numbers, there's always a cut and paste or a fill in the blank condemnation already written. So anyway, Moldovan President Sandu was barely reelected. The official number is 55.35%. And the opposition, the Socialist Party, which I think is somewhat of a National Socialist Party, Alexander Stoyanoglo. The claim is he received 51% of the vote cast at home before the diasporas piled in at midnight and after midnight. Now, Sandu got 42.5% of the vote in the first round. He only got 26%. But the other party's voters seemingly came to his side very quickly. And then he was defeated in the runoff by Sandu, barely. And the same issues that occurred in the first round also occurred in the second and the referendum on EU membership. Allegedly, it passed by 12,000 votes, or 0.8% margin. The divisions there are not only important, but very dangerous. Remember in Transnistria, there were about 1,500 Russian military peacekeepers there. To bring them to the path of a Ukrainian path of utter destruction, that's certainly not out of the question. That's the whole point of all of this, for now, as well as the economic side of things. But ultimately, the liberal globalist rulers defrauded voters in order to falsely legitimize this agenda. Now, keep in mind, Moldova is already a de facto member of all of this. There's also an upcoming referendum there to remove the neutrality clause of the constitution. A lot of this doesn't matter because Moldova is still under globalist control. And in all of this, the regime's myth makers, all these NGO media outlets, call these all victories over Russia. In other words, they don't really have anything to do with these countries, except that they have men that will be sent to die. And there'll be another fraud, like you saw in Montenegro many years ago, to bring Moldova into NATO, especially after Finland and Sweden. But these are just formalities. Of course, this never happened when the USSR was in existence. So as far as Moldova goes, they were already essentially members. But to accede directly and formally with the EU and NATO would be, according to them, a psychological and political blow to Russia rather than anything else. But the same could be said for Moldova, joining EU and NATO. Let me quote Andrew Corbico. He wrote on November 8th, "The risk, though, is that any such move could provoke the opposition into resorting to extreme protests out of desperation to preserve their country's increasingly nominal independence. Seizing government buildings and carrying out acts of violence can't be ruled out, but in that scenario, their speculative attempts to orchestrate a multipolar Maidan would be framed as Russian meddling. A hardcore crackdown could follow, and Romanian troops might be requested to assist if it spirals out of control." And of course, all of that would have full regime backing and money. It's just a matter of fact. As far as that country is concerned, the liberals, the globalists, have a monopoly on violence, have total media support in the West and at home, so they can do what they want. This is the problem. Because of all of this control, they're not going to be condemned by the West, they're not going to be condemned by the big banks. They could just mow them down without any fear. So far, we're looking at a Moldovan future that's dark, at least at the moment. But let me, I'm going to talk about the Moldovan Socialist Party. Now, I've read their official response. Some of this is a machine translation because I don't know that much about Romanian. But their official reaction goes like this. "Maia Sandu is an illegitimate president, recognized only by her sponsors and supporters abroad. The people of Moldova feel betrayed and robbed. In this context, the Socialist Party, the Republic of Moldova, which promoted the real winner of the presidential elections, Alexander Stoianoglo, declares the following." And they have a list. They have a list of things. Oh, and they also note that in Transnistria, that region, very few were allowed to vote, and that's a very Russian area. There was the same kind of very, very few polling stations. They say, "We have faced the unjustified reduction in polling stations, the blocking of voter access, electoral agitation on the day of silence and election day." Apparently that's a law, with, you know, that very day itself, there's no more campaigning. "And other irregularities in several countries, including hundreds of cases of intentional falsification, disappearance of ballot boxes, etc." This sounds very much like, you know, 2020. Hundreds of thousands could not exercise their right to vote, and that's what explains this minimal margin that she enjoyed. "International observers reported, even in the first round, massive cases of the illegitimate use of public and administrative resources." In other words, the ruling party is in power, even forcibly having public sector employees campaign and vote and give money to these people, and the total media monopoly. That goes without saying. But internally, even with all of those advantages, Stoianoglo, the president, won the real victory. So apparently, their numbers say 51.19% of Moldovan citizens actually living at home with all of these, not living abroad, with all of these disabilities, voted for the Socialist Party. In other words, they say Sandu became the president of the diaspora. And they don't, the Party of Socialists doesn't recognize votes from wards abroad. Partially, because it very much like in the U.S., all of this stuff came in long after midnight, and it was very difficult to certify it, to justify it. And they start talking about the Central Electoral Commission, again under NGO control, Constitutional Court, public television, the Court of Accounts, and other these state institutions like our FBI in the U.S. are highly politicized. They claim that they're going to win if that didn't happen. They won anyway, at least domestically. Now, the vice president of the parliament in Moldova, Batrinsia, said on November the 1st, Now, he brings up the OSCE observers and something called Promolex, as well as others from other different parts of the world in the presidential elections. And even they, even the European institutions, recorded many violations. I've read some of these reports starting on October 20th, the first round. You know, it was a runoff system. Now, Promolex is an explicitly EU Soros election watchdog organization. If you go to their page, by the way, everything's in English, well, it's not very difficult. You go to their page, you have the same list of regime institutions. They receive money from the OSCE, the embassies of the US, the UK, Norway, the American Bar Association, for some reason, and of course, the National Institute for Democracy, and several of Soros' institutions are listed there, and they say that there were a lot of problems with this election. There is no independent media when the NGOs control it or finance it. The whole point of all of these programs domestically is to train all of these reporters to go out and create their, quote, independent media. I've read some of the Promolex reports, and it surprised me. The Central Election Commission, too, reading this, has not answered anybody. This is very recent. They confirm the claims by the Socialist Party that messages from Sandu's team used ethnic hatred, in other words, anti-Russian things and threats, ethnically speaking, which, of course, technically would be illegal. It was called the most aggressive campaign in the history of the Republic. Violence was used against voters on the theory that they had to have been pro-Russian if they're going to vote for the Socialist Party. They say they doubled or even tripled the use of official state resources in Sandu's campaign. And of course, if that's true, the same thing goes for the referendum. Representatives of law enforcement at the local and national level organized meetings with the local governments, social workers, even the clergy, asking them not to support Stoyanoglo's campaign. The vice president of the parliament is a powerful man, very similar to Georgia. He actually made the phrase, stated the slogan, if you don't vote, someone else will do it in your place. And I'm pretty sure we know what he means in that regard. But I want to go back to Georgia, and I want to go back to May of this year. I've already mentioned the NGO law, the Transparency in Public Affairs law that was passed there. And there were crowds, as I mentioned, protesting this. Isn't that a strange thing to protest against? Stepan Kurganovich wrote in this respect, it seems strange to him and to me, that the transparency law is being rejected by the NGOs. Now, we know that it's in their self-interest that there's no investigation as to their money and the money that goes into their programs and candidates. But how a very young crowd, even they tried to storm the parliament and everything, so what? So the facts about money would be withheld from them? They were opposed to the parliamentary law, which was passed, to enact a legal mechanism that would provide for the registration of foreign agents operating within the country, which seems to be an odd thing to oppose. Talking about the foreign finance of various parties, politicians, movements in Georgia, and I'm not sure what they're protesting against, but their own ignorance. Certainly a large majority of the parliamentary deputies supported the law, and it went over several party lines. It's odd. The demonstrators just don't want to know that they oppose their fellow citizens being allowed to find out who supports these movements from abroad, all the logistical and financial assistance by and for the NGOs. The concept that they would be protesting, you know, turning on the lights to this stuff is odd. Now, I have the possibility is that this was a Jewish-based movement, because that would also apply to the Israelis. And the Israelis were heavily involved in building up the Georgian military back in 08. That might be the cause of at least some of it. The other cause is that these people may have been told that this is just a Russian law that's going to be used, well, the way they use law in, you know, the liberals use law, just to silence their own opponents. So the law says that if more than 20% of operating funds for any institution, even a campaign, originate from foreign sources, these NGOs have to publicly disclose this fact, first of all, and identify the sources of their funding. Now, of course, the NGOs are very angry at this. They called it a Russian law, but of course, it's nothing of the kind. The Duma in Russia passed this, I don't remember, I think I talked about it here a long time ago, that foreign agents have to be registered. But the Russian law is essentially a copy of the American Foreign Agents Registration Act, passed by the U.S. Congress in 1938. So it's an American law, more than anything else. So it just seems counterintuitive, though, because even the Israeli side, that might be a motive. But these young protesters, very computer savvy, are opponents of this law. They can easily research all of this. So you can't talk about ignorance. But what would motivate this large young crowd of Georgians to assemble day after day and show their revulsion towards a pretty normal and acceptable piece of legislation? Again, could Israel have something to do with this? I have contacts over there, not so much in Georgia, but in Moldova, and they tend to say that at least the educated strata is very pro-Western. In Moldova, you have a lot of kind of middle-class people who are pro-Western. You could say in Ukraine, after years of perception-altering indoctrination or hypnosis, about $5 billion, according to Victoria Nuland, that's where the Kievan revolution became possible. But it was really just in that one city. But it doesn't matter. Even if it's a small plurality, it's enough, especially in urban areas, to allow the country to be run by its enemies, maybe unwittingly. But they accepted these fairy tale promises and rejected the clear benefits that would have come from a Russian alliance. Georgia, Armenia, Moldova, they have nothing the West wants. There's only so much they could strip from local industry. They'll reduce it to just one big raw materials producer. And the same thing has been occurring in Georgia, too. Western special services, including Mossad, have had 20 years now. The Rose Revolution was in 2003. Thousands of these NGOs. That's why there's so many of them. There's no aspect of society that's not, that doesn't come from them. The money is going there, and where the money goes, that's where your upwardly mobile people want to go. But the economy will be imploding, and has been since their industry, which has no relation to the West, is entirely geared to the East. They strip down and hope that they can make up for the disaster of the last few years in terms of sanctions. But I'm not sure I want to lay everything on this kind of manipulation. And I'm willing to say that enough of the vote fraud is done, whether the diaspora was involved or not. This constant fear-mongering in terms of, because there is a Russian presence in the borders of Moldova, that can actually manipulate people. The Israeli theory that I have, you know, that, especially in military circles, that a lot of this is going to be traced back to Mossad. And so you have a Jewish angle here. How many people that can bring out, or it may increase the urgency in places like Georgia. Not, you know, there are some Jews in Georgia. But, you know, that's about all I have, except that you're just dealing with people whose connection to social media, which is run by our enemies, especially over there, just believe that this is a fashionable thing to do. So you have legislative elections that have gone very well in Georgia, presidential elections that show a complete split, the manipulation of the, and possibly in Moldova, you know, where it just simply didn't happen, and Sandu is not really the president. That's very, very possible. Manipulation, control the press, control the universities, all this other stuff, that's actually what did it. If the NGOs weren't involved, what would this number actually be? If they pulled off the fraud in the off-year elections in the U.S., trying to get Hillary elected, trying to get Biden elected, these people hardly campaigned, and they can manipulate the system easily right in the U.S., well, certainly they're going to do it elsewhere, especially when it comes to trying to rescue the total collapse of their experiment in Ukraine. So you say the Moldovan election went to the national, or, you know, the Socialist Party, the National Socialist Party. There's every reason to believe that. The referendum, very odd, decided by the diaspora in the EU, late at night, when they allegedly came in, disenfranchisement of other places, especially Moldovans elsewhere, especially to the east. Legislative elections in Georgia that completely destroyed the left in a you know, elections with many parties, not just two, and an increasingly unpopular president in Georgia, where of course they were able to elect their own prime minister. The enemies of all of this, the enemies of these nations, they're just concerned with Russia, and they're foreigners, especially the president of Georgia right now. But prime ministers are a bit more important given their system. The color revolutions in Georgia is a definite possibility. In Moldova, of course, they have no real reason to. But when you have a very strong socialist party that's putting out or even citing Soros' groups, especially with her, you know, low trust numbers, Sandu's trust numbers being very low, you put all this together, and the claims to Russian interference are absolutely meaningless. No one buys it because everyone knows who these NGOs are. These elections may not be real either, but at least there's some comic relief so far as this transparency law. Either this is a Jewish thing, or they're claiming that the Russians are going to invade if this law passes, and don't put that past them. Of course, we all know these are all foreign organizations, people educated all over the place. The Socialist Party's reaction in Moldova is somewhat convincing. Why the American Bar Association is supporting the Promolex is a bit of a mystery, but the only thing that's consistent here is Russia as the center of all of this, attempting to use these countries to save a failing, miserable, genocidal war. Ukraine has been depopulated. But of course, in Moldova, the ruling party simply used the state to promote their candidates, including the use of force and violence in many places. Anyway, everyone, I've gone 10 minutes over. I know I bit off a lot here, but this is the future of these places. And I have the feeling that the regime is looking at deep losses if they continue. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.